Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 2nd of June. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning, 15 minutes past 9 o'clock. And we have a very good panel to talk about some very important issues and a lot going on in our world at large. Of course, as always, we welcome your input. It's all very important as we talk about what's going on. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you. It is always, always important. All right, let me introduce everybody to you. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning.
All right, that's it. Good morning.
That's it. You know, it is a good morning, but there's some terrible things happening in this country, and I'm sure we're going to talk about them today. It's cool. It's quite alarming.
We go to former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, who joins us. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Happy to be here.
Wonderful to have you on the program. Investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Well, I agree with Alan. I don't think it's a good morning at all.
All right, we'll get into that. You kids are in a good mood this morning. And assistant professor at Albany Law School, C.G. Dodds. Good morning, C.G. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Maybe I should say hello.
Hello. Yes, that's right. We'll just stick with hello. Well, it is. It was all very troublesome of what has been happening over the last 24 hours, really since last week, of course. But we're going to start by talking about what happened with the president yesterday from the White House and the Rose Garden, and then of course the scores of officers and protesters who were injured last night and the seventh day of unrest. So then on top of all of this, the president made several, made an announcement yesterday, and basically said, you know, we're going to crack down. He was going to be the law and order president. And if the military had to come in and take over, the streets of states, not the District of Columbia, but the states, then if they were too weak to do it, or jerks, as he referred to, that is what he would do. Then this morning, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer are condemning the president for tear gassing and rubber bullets and all of this for a photo opportunity. This is St. John's Episcopal Church. Authorities, there were attacks on protesters, all to move these peaceful protesters out of the way so that the president could have a photo op in front of the church, where I don't think I will can say this any other way than very awkwardly just held a Bible for a few seconds, then brought his all-white staff and people up with him to stand with him as he held the Bible, and then walked away. It was very surreal. It was very odd. And it's really hard to figure out what exactly the plan was of who thought that maybe was a good idea. But we'll talk about it this morning. Alan, your thoughts?
Well, in addition to everything you're saying, Joe, he had the added embarrassment of the bishop of the Episcopal Church. I believe it was Episcopal Church.
Yes, the Episcopal Bishop of Washington.
Really going for him and saying this was a terrible thing done basically by a bad man. She didn't use those words, but that's what she said.
A fire set in the basement of the church the night before, and the president talked about that in his remarks. But then when they went over to the church, the bishop, Reverend Marianne Buddy, was never asked, was never brought in to the conversation. And her point of saying that I was, that I'm outraged that this took place and not even given a courtesy call, and her quote, Alan, was that they would be clearing the area with tear gas so they could use one of our churches as a prop.
Yeah, so it was terrible. And as I've said and as you've said, look, not only was it she, but it was also her bishop. In other words, the bishop of the whole country, apparently, who had equally tough things to say about this president. Look, we've said all along that we're afraid of Trump militarizing and getting to the point where losing by 11 points in all the polls, 10 or 11 points, and I want to see what's going to happen next in these polls, is a terrible moment for him. And he is depending on getting reelected. And did they have to clear those people away yesterday? Of course not. That was ridiculous. They were peaceful. They were doing their thing. And he brings in the horses. I remember I was watching the whole thing. He brings in the horses. He brings in the tear gas. And he makes it happen. And then he talks about riotous situations, which he has just made happen. It really just gets to the point. I know Rosemary is going to have something to say about this, where you really say a madman is running the country.
Yeah, it's you know, as he was speaking in the White House, you could hear, I mean, as this, it was all obviously it was a show, and it was choreographed, I would say, in many cases rather poorly, but these peaceful protesters outside the gates were being dispersed with tear gas and flash grenades. You could hear the explosions as the president was speaking, all the while to, you know, clear the way for the president to pose for the photo op at St. John's Church. Rosemary, let's go to you.
Well, I think he was totally in his element yesterday. He was P.T. Barnum of politics, and the fact that the only failing was that his staging of that event was so transparent that it has been widely commented on. Normally he does this without that. He didn't handle it well. But his goal, which we're overlooking, is nothing short of martial law. And I worried about that from the minute we heard yesterday that he was meeting with William Barr. That was his only appointment in the morning. And I said, watch, he's looking for Barr to find him some legal way that he can bring the army into the streets of America. And that's exactly what he did, using D.C., where there's not a governor. So you get around somewhat conflicting ancient laws. We're talking about laws that go back to the early 19th century. And he's using those laws to bring in the military to handle civil unrest, bypassing governors. That's why he used D.C., because, of course, there's no governor there, so he didn't have to get into any legal niceties. And he loves, this is better than a 4th of July military parade. He's bringing the military in and acting like a big hero saving America. And what is lost in all of this is that, again, we're talking about Trump politics, and we're talking about the military. And we are forgetting, I hope CG will talk about this, that the original violence here was the death of a man who did not deserve what happened to him. And four men are still outstanding. We have some charges against them, not all that I think should be brought against them. What about that autopsy? Let's talk about that, too. How is the official autopsy so different than the one that the family paid for by apparently very reputable doctors? Why are they so different? Points, of course, to completely different charges, depending on which autopsy you listen to. And we're, instead of that original violence, we're talking about looters and stupid theatrical stunts by the president. We have mentioned distraction by this president in the past, but this is the most hideous I've seen.
But, you know, I was thinking about that last night, of diversion, distraction. But if the diversion is diverting from the diversion, it just becomes chaos, doesn't it? It's absolute chaos.
Don't you think that's what we have?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yes, I don't think it, but I think for one point we were saying that we were diverting, there was a diversion from one thing or another. So don't look at what I'm doing here, look over here. But now you don't know where to look because there's fires in every direction, literally and figuratively. C.G. Dodds.
Yes, turned Jeb Bush into a prophet.
Right.
He is a candidate of chaos, and he's going to be a president of chaos. And indeed, that is true.
C.G. Dodds.
I think it And I think we've touched on this already in each of our own ways, but I think it's important to, we can't overemphasize the fact that he's not a blithering idiot, irrespective of how clumsily he staged the entire thing. This man is a tyrant. And so many of us have been warning the country about this from the very beginning. And now that everything is coming into fruition, I want everyone to understand the gravity of the situation and the gravity of what we are seeing. He tapped into the darkest instincts of this country, the use of religion for subjugation and oppression of people of color. That's exactly what he did. That's why he did it. That's why he staged it the way that he did.
Yeah.
It's because he wanted to reiterate that people of color should be subjugated and oppressed, and that he would stop at nothing in order to make sure that happened. And I think it is absolutely absurd for Republicans, for people who call themselves conservatives, for people who call themselves Christians to continue to support this man. Number one, he's the reason that we have the separation of church and state. That right there is why we have the separation of church and state. Number two, he is by definition a tyrant. If we were to look at the language of the Declaration of Independence, which I pulled up immediately when I woke up this morning, the history of the present king of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount of payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He is affected to render the military dependent and superior to the civil power. He has abdicated government hereby declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be ruler of a free people. He is unfit. And at this point, we cannot afford to just engage in ad hominem attacks. Actual action must be taken.
I want to get to Mike real quick before the break, I want to talk about what that action is.
Joe, that's right. I want to go back to CG and just ask her, at this point, action must be taken. And I'd love to know what you got in mind.
Yeah, what do we do?
So, first things first, Congress needs to act. Okay, I know Nancy and Chuck woke up and issued a statement. At this point, there needs to be organization. Congress needs to take action. I think it's already been a great thing that the governors have spoken out against this. A number of them have made it clear that they are not willing to allow the military to come into their state.
Republican and Democratic governors, we should note.
Republican and Democratic governors. The protests must continue. And this is what I think is a miscalculation on the part of Trump. This is how you can tell this is someone who's never been in a real conflict in life. He's never been in a playground fight. Because if he'd ever been in a playground fight, he would know you can only get away with bullying people for so long. People stand up for themselves, and he has consistently fanned the flames, and this is how we've gotten to this point. So the protest absolutely must continue.
I hope you're right. I mean, I am sure you're right about the protests. I'm very concerned about the break-ins and what has happened in Albany and some of these other places, because I think it is so counterproductive. I interviewed the governor. Was it yesterday, Joe?
Yes, yesterday.
He made that plain also. He said that, too. I think that I got a couple of letters saying, no, that's very important that this be done. Run on your neighbors, on a black person who owns a store, on a Vietnamese person. I've been saying Korean, but Vietnamese person who owns the Tay Market and does a wonderful job near WAMC. That to me is so counterproductive. And I do know that there are those people who have been in the protest groups who've been saying, this is not the same group that we are.
Right.
This is somebody else with a different agenda.
There doesn't seem to be. I mean, we've
Ray, can I please add something on this?
Can
Joe,
you,
if it's okay?
Actually, so let's hold a break.
And I would like to say, I think that this matter is way complicated. There's some of the violence
at
the meeting and the rioting is actual frustration.
Okay,
and
I have. I just have to go to a break.
I can't tell what.
I just have to go to a break, and then when I come back, I'll let you talk. I want to get to Mike. I want to get to CG. I want to get to everybody. So let's just go to a quick break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and CG Dodds making up the panel this morning. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Okay, Rosemary, let's begin with you. I interrupted you, so make your point, and then I want to go back to CG, and then we'll welcome Mike and prove that he's actually on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I feel like I forgot Mike was on, so I apologize for that. We all have a lot to say. My point was that Trump calling in the military does not get at this issue of solving the problem we see in Albany. There are many groups operating. One are just peaceful protesters. Others are protesters who have legitimate concerns and so frustrated and angry that, yes, they are breaking into what we call rioting. And then there are opportunistic criminals who are taking advantage of the unrest and the police being occupied to commit real crimes. That's very complicated and convoluted. You don't fix that by bringing in the military. That squashes everything. And their first act was to put down the peaceful protests in Lafayette Park. That was the least of the three groups that should have been getting any kind of action. And instead, we are seeing, I mean, if there's any silver in this cloud, we are seeing calls that we can rally around, like a unifying policy on police procedures and use of force. It's different in every state now. That needs to be looked at and reviewed. And in New York, we're seeing the possible end, finally, of 50A, that horrible law that, I, without the intention of the writers, has turned into a secrecy shield for bad cops. That may go by the wayside at long last. So there are actions that we can take that will actually address the root cause here, which is discrimination and murder against our minority community members.
Two quick points to what you were actually saying earlier, Rosemary, is one, you mentioned that the first person he met with yesterday was William Barr, which is absolutely true. We should also note, however, that the architect of the photo op apparently was Hope Hicks, according to reporting from the Washington Post. The second phone call he took yesterday was with Vladimir Putin, for whatever that is worth. Mike Spain, go ahead.
Yeah, it just never ends, does it? You know, it reminded me when I was reading about this last night about what Trump did back in 1989. You know, it was just right after the Central Park jogger assault, and Trump took out full-page ads in the New York City newspapers, and he said, "Bring back the death penalty, bring back our police," and he just clamored for law and order. And I think that since becoming president, he's forged this image that he wants to get people out of prison and end long-term prison, unfair prison sentences, and wanted, criminal justice reform. Well, this really, what happened in the last 24 hours establishes Trump as the same guy he was back then. He's bigoted, and he wanted to have these guys get the death penalty before they were even tried. And of course, we all now know that they didn't do it. They were exonerated. And he's just using it to inflame people, just like the Episcopal bishop said. All he's doing is inflaming violence. And, you know, it worked back in 1968. There were riots. You know, there was riots after Martin Luther King's death, and there was riots in the streets that summer. And Richard Nixon came along, and he was the law and order candidate, and who got elected in 1968? Not Hubert Humphrey.
You know, Alan, so much has been talked about the base and appeasing the base. From people that they were talking to last night on the news, and I realize this is very anecdotal, this didn't even seem to go over with the base.
Well, yes. I can't wait to see how the American people are going to react to this. I know there are many people who don't believe in polls. But Biden was leading by 10 points when all of this started. This is so clearly a way in which Trump is arranging his, trying to arrange his reelection. And I think there were, Mike's point about Richard Nixon is extremely well taken. We don't know what the American middle class is going to do here. I'm very interested, by the way, Joe, at some point in going back to CG, because I know she took some exception to maybe something I said, but I'd love to hear what that was.
Did you take exception to anything Alan said, CG?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
So, I'm not saying you use this exact phrasing, but this is something that I've heard over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And it sort of has been along the lines of the killing or police brutality against unarmed Black people is wrong, but we cannot tolerate property damage. We cannot tolerate the looting and the destruction. And if we just look at the basic grammar of a sentence like that, the word but indicates a contradiction.
Well, but you made it up. I didn't say that. You put the but in.
Let's go back to what I said before that. I said okay. I'm not saying that you said that.
Well, then how can you have an exception with me if you...
I made that very clear, that I wasn't saying that you said that, that that's something that I've seen over and over and over again.
Well, so, but I didn't say that.
But it's also along the lines of what I've heard you say similarly. But I was very clear in saying that that was not a direct quotation from you.
Well,
so
I'm
going to go ahead and go along. So the word but is a direct contradiction, which renders the preceding statement, for the most part, irrelevant. So when people use the terminology of but property damage, they're essentially stating that the property damage is more important than the lives lost.
Well, I don't think that's true.
So when I take umbrage to certain statements emphasizing the loss of property, it's for that reason. I take umbrage, and like I said, this is not unique to you. I take umbrage with the emphasis on peaceful protesting when the reality is that Dr. King and Malcolm X were both assassinated. You got one advocating peaceful protest, which I'm not saying that's not ineffective, because it is. Clearly, a part of it was effective, but they both met the same violent end. And if the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result, it is absolutely insane to think that we can continue peacefully kneeling and begging and pleading for people to stop killing us. The reality of the situation is we would not be here had murderers not been allowed to go free. These people are still walking around.
Well, even when there were peaceful protests, when football players got down on one knee, that was not respected. Trump and Pence went after that with a ferocity way outside of the offense supposedly being committed. And now if the methods are not peaceful, you can understand where that escalation comes from.
Alan?
That a lot of people who are speaking out now about the property issues are people who have been utterly silent throughout.
Well, not the governor who said exactly that yesterday.
And not the governor, you're right, but I'm talking about the American that I speak to every day. I'm talking about the individuals who are suddenly posting about racial justice issues on social media. Those people have been violent. And I also think that it's not exactly true that violent protests or whatever you want to call them don't necessarily work, because I'm seeing a lot of folks who at the beginning of this were saying, they shouldn't be violently protesting, lock them up, et cetera, et cetera. Well, guess what? Now that they're seeing the extent of the damage and they see that it's coming for them, all of a sudden, the sentiment is, well, why didn't they just lock up these people? And so while I am definitely not advocating violence against anyone, I don't want that to be misconstrued in any way.
How could we not misconstrue it? You're saying, look, frustration led to this. It happened. We had a governor on the air yesterday who said they're criminals when they do that. We have a next door neighbor, a Vietnamese, a wonderful family who were making a penny on a dollar or a dime on a dollar, and they had their windows broken. I don't think that that's acceptable. The governor didn't, and I don't.
I don't think CG is saying it's acceptable. She's saying that it pales in contrast to its success.
And what I'm saying, but what I am saying is that this emphasis on property damage is utterly unacceptable.
I'm not emphasizing it. I happen to think that can I just finish or not? No, maybe not.
Well, no. I can hold two competing ideas.
Oh, that's good. That's a very good thing to say. No, you may not finish.
Everybody can.
All right, Alan, go ahead.
May I?
Well, let me go to Alan, and then we'll go.
I just want to say, I have to say that nobody has more respect for what's gone on in terms of the protests here. I've supported it from day one, and I think it's correct. I think what happens is that you lose the fight with the American people, and I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. You're going to elect Donald Trump if you're not careful. Because he's going to ride this all the way with the American middle class. And I got to tell you, I don't want to see Trump the president again.
CG.
I don't think anybody wants to see Trump the president again.
Yes, but the tactic.
Yes, they do. A lot of people do.
Well, some do.
And I think that's where we disagree.
Where do we disagree on that?
I think that, to your point, there will be people who are utterly disgusted and say, I will not vote for Joe Biden because I feel like he's not coming out strong enough against this property damage and this looting, and these people are criminals. I'm not willing to bet that that will be the reason that Donald Trump is reelected.
I think he is. I think he's willing to bet on it. And I think that's
motivating. I think that's exactly what he's doing. That's why he said he was going to call in the military. He thinks that if he taps into this, he thinks that this is his ticket. And that's why he did it. And
that's why
I also say Congress needs to act. The protests absolutely must continue. Because the reality of the situation is the protest is not only just restrained to just black people and brown people. Everyone is participating in these protests.
No question. No question. By the way, CG, by the way, you are, of course, aware that the president does think that this is going to lead to his reelection.
And that
people of color are having their stores. NPR had an incredible series of stories this morning. People of color and others are suffering terrible loss as a result of this. And to say that frustration justifies it doesn't do it for me. I think you have to be and by the way, CG, for whatever it's worth, if you say the Congress has to do it and you think those clowns in the United States Senate, those Republicans who run that place, are going to have any interest in this at all, I would take a great difference with you.
No, I do think that they've shown, particularly the Republicans, that they are not particularly interested in Democratic ideas. But to the point that you all made earlier, that you'll be interested to see how the American people respond to this, because people aren't very happy with him doing what he did to those protests, the peaceful protesters yesterday, and staging his little photo op in front of the church.
How do you know that?
Just based on what I've seen from the comments that I've seen on social media on two different platforms, there are people who are not pleased with that. There are people who are very happy with it. People who call themselves Christians are, yes, absolutely, number one, president, law and order. That's not something that we will know. Those people would have voted for Trump irrespective. And so part of my frustration is I am tired of the Democratic Party chasing this unicorn voter. And that's what I feel like is happening. The Democratic Party is almost willing to sacrifice the lives of black people. Some people within the Democratic Party, I'm not going to say the entire party, are almost willing to sacrifice the lives of black people in order to get votes that they would not get anyway.
Mm. We're going to have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have letters. We'll go to those. Mike, I promised you you wanted to get in, and we'll do that real quick, and then we'll go to a break. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, no. I was just going to – I understand, CG, your in the indignation of, for years, black people have died at the hands of white police officers, and time and again, there's trials. There's all kinds of outrage, but the cops are exonerated and nothing really happens. You get a couple nights of some civil disobedience where people are breaking in and looting, which is a small subset of the peaceful protests, by the way. And all of a sudden, we're bringing out the Pentagon to stop it. I mean, it's like you have this instantaneous response because property damage, and yet the death of people at the hands of police officers continues and goes on. These protests never would have been necessary had anything of substance happened the last 10 times this happened. But it doesn't change, and that's the frustration.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue on with the conversation. We have Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and C.G. Dodds. We will continue after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and C.G. Dodds. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. So when you look at this, I guess, of where we go from here, and, I wonder, Alan, you spoke to New York Governor the New York governor yesterday. Many governors, both Republican and Democrat, are very concerned about where the president's going on this as they're dealing with the real violence in their cities. And from all accounts of what's being reported in the Washington Post and others who had complete transcripts of the call between the president and the governors, I think it's safe to say it didn't go well. Yeah. So where does that, where does that conversation go from here?
Well, it is clear that this president is leading us into a military dictatorship if he has his way. Now, some people may say that that's a little excessive. I don't think so. When I saw those troops out there clearing away those protesters for no good reason whatsoever, it indicated to me what he has in mind for us. And if he can't win this election the legitimate way, and he didn't the last time, he didn't get the most votes, by the way, he'll do it. He'll do it one way or the other. And using the military is what I've been scared to death about right from the very beginning, and I still am.
Rosemary.
Well, CG brought this up earlier, but I, except for Kamala Harris, I don't think I heard from a single member of Congress, any rep or senator last night expressing outrage. And I guess Nancy is out this morning with it, but she's a Democrat. It doesn't have the same weight. Where's McConnell and where's Schumer, if we're going to talk about Democrats? Why are they not speaking about this? And they should and can be taking action. That makes me very upset. I think the governors are and have been, as they did in COVID, have taken the lead. And there's a lot they can do. But this president is kind of getting very good at getting what he wants, just as he was with the business leader. And he's using Barr, who is not stupid. All the complaints I have about Trump, I don't against Barr. He knows what he's doing, and it's evil and corrupt. And he definitely found a loophole in the law to go bring in the military, and he's going to keep on finding loopholes. I do think that we are under threat of some sort of dictatorial control. I also want to hear from some military people. Are they happy with this? Why are we not hearing from them? Is the chief of staff really happy about being now in charge of policing on city streets, or was he taken by surprise? Trump is capable of that, too, announcing on the world that his chief of staff of military operations is going to be in charge of policing, or did he consult with them ahead of time? There's a lot more reporting that we don't know answers to yet.
That's true, but a couple of things, Rosemary, just in terms of facts here. I believe, at least I read, that Schumer, who I have my own issues with and made that clear in the past, that Schumer and Pelosi issued joint statements on this thing. So
right. It was a joint statement, you're right, yeah, but yes. He's the head of the Senate, for the minority.
Right.
And that is the operative body here. And so I think a joint statement is, once again, it's Nancy who's leading it. I have no qualms about her at all. It's him I have the qualms about. Mm-hmm. This should be, why isn't he calling out McConnell? Why isn't he rallying senators? Mitt Romney has been a better spokesman for the minority than Chuck Schumer has been.
Let me just say, and this may surprise you, Rosemary, I totally agree with you. Schumer really needs to be out there, and he's the head Democrat, and he needs to be properly outraged about all of this. And I've said this about Schumer from day one, and I still think, look, I like the guy, but I think that if he wants to be the head, he really has to represent his party.
Alan, do you think the Democrats are trying to preserve the suburban white women that they need so desperately in order to defeat Trump, and therefore they're not holding back their criticism and just kind of retaining, trying to just not inflame it and just try to walk the middle line, and it's going to backfire on them?
Well, it could. It could. I listened to Pritzker on NPR this morning. He's terrific.
Yeah.
And he didn't take any baloney. He gave it right back to the president in their conversation yesterday.
Yeah.
So there are some Democrats who, who have it. The interesting thing about Pritzker, of course, is that he's rich. And I think, being rich helps you in terms of your cojones issues. So for whatever it's worth, I think there are some Democrats who really are out there. I think Cuomo was certainly unapologetic about going after the president yesterday on all of this. So, there are some Democrats who think the easy way is to just shut up. And up until now, that has worked for Biden. Biden's 10 points out.
CG, what do you think that Biden and other Democratic leaders need to do in this moment?
What do Biden and the other Democratic leaders need to do at this moment?
I don't know.
It's hard for me to articulate specifics as far as specific steps that they need to take.
So what's the right thing to say then?
That's not my job, to come up with the right thing to say for them.
Okay. All right.
I'm not trying to be flip about it.
So let me ask you, so what would you like to hear then?
Well, number one, I would like to hear utter condemnation. I would like to hear a commitment to the Constitution. And I would like to hear an action plan for what they intend to do going forward to ensure that it does not become an autocracy.
I'd like to see impeachment of Bill Barr begin this week.
But
what'd you say, Rosemary? I'm sorry, didn't hear it.
The impeachment.
I would like to see more than what CG has said. That's certainly a start. But how about let's look into impeachment of Bill Barr? Let's call in the military heads of the chief of staff for an interview on how they feel this would go. I think that we should be looking at support by the Democratic legislators of governors who are taking the right action, and the start of real commitment to police reform, national police reform. That goes back to Bill Barr, because the whole idea of looking at patterns of abuse in police departments that the Obama administration began so promisingly in Ferguson has been completely dismantled. Why are we not back on that? This is certainly
You know why we're not back on it, because you know who the president is. I mean, he's not going back.
We're talking about what Democrats should be saying.
Oh, I see.
That's a step that can be taken today and immediately.
Mike?
Joe, you're better at accessing polls than anybody I know. Is there anything that has come out that you can tell us in terms of what the American people are thinking in reaction to all of this?
No. I did look it up this morning. There's a Newsweek poll from that George Floyd protests increased support for Joe Biden over Donald Trump, according to a poll. But it's from the Morning Consult. found that 45% of registered voters were more likely to vote for Biden, all but confirmed as the Democratic nominee as a result of ongoing unrest. By comparison, 31% say they would be more likely to vote for Trump in November because of the protests. But I don't know.
I knew you could do it.
Thank you. What I don't know is about Morning Consult. I don't know what their history yeah. is and what their how they work as a polling outfit. Mike, do you know anything about Morning Consult?
No, I'm not familiar with them. There's so many out there. You know, you worry that they're just an internet poll where people
right.
can do it themselves. There's no scientific, basis for the poll. But no, I was just going to add to what Rosemary said. I mean, why aren't the Democrats now talking? Why isn't Joe Biden now talking about restarting that policy, that program that was abandoned by Trump, that Obama began after Ferguson? Mm. I mean, it's something. I mean, more has to happen. But I mean, that it's just like how Trump got rid of the, Centers for Disease Control pandemic team. You know, we should point that out and hold them accountable. Would it have stopped, what happened in Minneapolis? Perhaps not. But at least we'd be in the right direction. And that has been dismantled. So, yeah, we should talk about that. Hold Trump accountable for that.
We are late for break.
I will say that it's been a little bit early and that Biden could come out today. I would not, if I had been Biden, acted yesterday when Trump was stomping all over, I hope, his election hopes by his stupid moves. But he needs to come out today. You're right with that, Mike. He also should be connecting COVID and the demonstrations. On top of everything else, there's a great danger in these crowds that are being generated that someone should be addressing. Dr. Fauci has not been heard from and has not spoken to Trump, I just read, for the last 2.5 weeks. That's interesting.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and C.G. Dodds. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Okay, let's go to some letters. Joel says on martial law, Rosemary is right. Trump wants to declare martial law. He is counting on Barr to justify it and the Republicans to support it. The last time martial law was declared was December 1941 after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. We are doomed.
There's lots of law discussions going on right now about whether he can or not, but this is his specialty. He goes to old laws and takes actions we've never seen in modern times, so it immediately devolves into a court fight on whether he can do it or not. In the meantime, he moves ahead. Thus, there is military on the streets in D.C., so, yeah, we are definitely moving towards militarization. Paul Krugman today called it weaponized racism.
Well, I think part of what he does, I agree with Rosemary, I think he likes to do that because then he can say he did something. Even though he probably was advised that something like this would end up in court, but he can feed it to
right.
his base. He can say, see,
right.
this is exactly what I did. And I think he's also putting the military in a horrible situation. Because if you
yes.
think about it, if something like this were to happen in what we call a developing nation, which I would argue we are getting close to, given the fact that we can completely outfit our police officers in militarized gear, but our nurses and CNAs and doctors are working in trash bags to combat a pandemic. But that's another discussion. If this were a quote-unquote developing nation, we would be sending our troops over there to intervene in the name of democracy. And so now he's putting troops in a situation where they have to choose between obeying the commander-in-chief, which, of course, is what they are supposed to do, what they have vowed to do, what they are sacrificing their lives to do, or committing treason.
Okay, there's one other thing, too, that we have not talked about yet, and that was that weird line in his stupid speech yesterday, which, if he is not insane, is scary, where he said, I'm protecting your rights, including your
Second Amendment rights. That's right.
Yeah.
Uh-ho-ho.
What does that mean? Calling on an organized militia to fight against who? Looters?
black and white people protesting for equality. What did that mean? I found that truly frightening, and I don't want to just ascribe it to his being insane.
He also likened guns or rocks to guns, right? There was also that weird line, too.
He's calling on white supremacists. I'm in Richmond, Virginia right now. There, and it's odd that this is not being reported at the time. There are white supremacists walking around with semi-automatic weapons in front of Confederate monuments.
Right.
That's what's happening right now. And that is what he's tapping into.
Hey, I think Joe made another point earlier that we all kind of missed, and that is after he talked to Bill Barr, the Attorney General, yesterday, Trump spent time on the phone with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
And he's trying to pull him back into the G7 and talking very flatteringly about Putin. I mean, this kind of strongman militaristic government stuff really appeals to him, and he reaches out to where he can get some affirmation, I guess. It's scary.
Marilyn writes, I agree with the panelists. Trump is trying to win another election based on fear. Chaos only provides him a means to an end. Biden absolutely needs to get out in front of the press with some kind of plan to get community members and stakeholders together to address the issue of racial injustice. But he also has to stress that these mass gatherings are dangerous during this COVID epidemic.
By the way, Joe, one of the reasons I haven't been talking is that he's on now. He's on CNN, and I watched a little bit of it. He's come out with a fairly fiery speech in which he talks about the right to protest. He comes down hard on the president, really hard. And at the same time, he says violence is not acceptable. So there you are. That's the report from Joe Biden.
And that's the speech from Philadelphia, right?
It's live right now.
No, but he's speaking from Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Alan, let's see. We got, we go to Carl, who says the Democrats need to say something in response to Trump's statements. For Senator Schumer saying something, anything halfway reasonable is absolutely needed. Silence communicates weakness and worse, complicity. Alan, I completely agree with Alan. The looting is the most despicable thing that these people can do. Property damage is a crime. Police killing an armed black man who wasn't resisting is a crime. How does one crime justify another? Macy's is being looted is illegal, and everyone should be prosecuted to the fullest extent. If I were a business owner, I would defend my business with force if someone came in to loot my business. Also, the system has turned from racism into classism. A poor white person has less rights than a rich white person, and same for people of color. Money talks and everybody else walks, as Alan says. Good morning. CG is right. George Floyd is dead because I didn't speak up loud enough. I can't hide behind my ACLU card and say I did my best. I'm terrified of COVID-19, but I'm going out to march. I can't hide behind my responsibility to my child. Battles aren't won by the childless men. I'm sorry I took so long. Please forgive me. We go to Freda, who says peaceful protest is great, of course, but not if we all just sit back and say, wasn't that wonderful? How many people came out to support the cause and then nothing happens other than development of a token committee to discuss the issues? Maybe it takes some unfortunate violence for people to really listen. Did the huge women's march in D.C. after King Trump was seated do anything? Maybe millions peacefully protesting aren't really heard. Anybody want to talk about that?
That's regrettable. Go ahead, Alan. Yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't have much to say. It's just a technical thing, Joe. For whatever is happening, my machine here keeps failing out. So there's some things I can't respond to because I don't hear them. I do apologize.
Oh, okay. So I guess Rob is working on it. Okay, I gotcha. Okay, go ahead, Mike. You were going to say?
No, it's true. You know, a million women come out for the march after Trump was installed. And, you know, you don't see the repercussions. And the reason is that the politicians aren't listening to the crowds. They're ignoring them. And I hate the notion that violence is the only way to get the attention of people. I don't buy that. But I think the numbers if they were consistent and they continued, I think they would get the attention of politicians and get the attention of other people. And let's not forget about the good stories that are coming out of this. Like in the city of Albany, Alan, you're so right. Your Vietnamese grocer was trashed, and that was a terrible thing. But people were out Sunday morning. People who were peacefully protesting Saturday and came out Sunday morning to clean up the neighborhoods, help clean up things. And the city has started giving out grants to small businesses to help them mitigate the damage that was caused by the few that came in and did the vandalism and the looting. And you know, I think the more of that we see, the more we'll realize this isn't just some fringe. This is people, all kinds of people. Then there's the problem of coronavirus. So wear your mask if you're going, and keep your social distance if you're going to go protest.
I think you make a good point. The Shartoks, for whatever it's worth, they're going to give $100 to the Vietnamese Tay market, because it's outrageous. It's just outrageous that they should have to be punished because of others' frustrations. They work very hard, and they need to be supported.
Mark says Trump is not worried because none of the people who are out protesting have been talking about rallying the vote. Nobody protesting is saying anything about Trump as the source of the problem, so he has no serious reason to believe that his reelection is in danger. Elizabeth says, I am a Democratic white woman in my 60s. I feel as if my soul is being torn apart. I have too many friends who have suffered discrimination. Americans should be demonstrating, and so should the police, along with the rest of Americans. Police brutality needs to be checked.
You know, that's a really good point. What happened in Minneapolis ought to offend good policemen, and there are many of them, far more than we white citizens who never have to deal with this sort of thing. And it is happening. There are police kneeling. There are policemen around the country hugging protesters. I think we are seeing that. It's one of the few little pieces of silver in this awful cloud that I've seen.
Paula writes, CG, we need to hear about the role that white supremacists are planning in upping the ante in these demonstrations all over the country. What is going on?
I think white supremacists are doing what they've always done, which is figuring out ways to surreptitiously insert themselves to cause as much chaos and injury as possible. I think that all that we can do is we can do our best to counter them. But that's really all that we can do. I think that at their core, white supremacists are cowards, which is why they are doing it surreptitiously, with the exception of, as I stated, in Richmond, I've seen people come out with guns. But for the most part, they're not doing that. Their fiery rhetoric of when it happens, we're going to show up, we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, God forbid it actually gets to that point, but they see it as easier and more beneficial to them, and of course as less of a risk, to try to infiltrate the movements and to take them over, to pretend as though there's this excessive violence being enacted by people who are supporting Black Lives Matter, when in reality, a portion of that violence, and we don't know how much. Some people have said it's a lot. Some people have said it's not as much. But there is a portion of that violence that is being committed by white supremacists. And all that we can do is attempt to root it out.
We got a letter from Nick who says, vote. Protesting is a waste of time is the subject line. George Floyd's brother said vote. The police chief of Houston said vote. The black turnout in 2016 was lower than it was when Obama won. That from Nick. We go to Joseph who says, Alan, you keep saying the polls have Biden up double digits. Those polls results are for registered voters. His lead is 5% among likely voters. What do you make of that, Alan? I've never 5%, really
5% is better than no percent,
right? with a margin of error, sure. That's still a good. I mean, we would consider that a trashing if it's true, right?
And by the way, if it's true, I mean, I really don't know. I can't look at the stuff. You know, this is Biden today is so impressive. that you're going to have to listen, everybody, when you get a chance to go back and listen to what he's had to say. But he, I really think he's on a winning streak right here. I did have a question for CG, because I didn't quite get that. Do you think that there has been an infiltration, CG, of the people who are doing the violence? Because there have been some, at least anecdotal reports, that some of those people, after all, it does play into Trump's hands, are from the right, and therefore that they are doing it because it's exactly what he wants to have happen.
Right. I do think that there have, to your point, there have been anecdotal reports that it has been people from the right. There have been some white supremacists involved, and what they are counting on, they're counting on the fact that people are going to be so outraged by the property damage that they are going to crack down on the protests, all of the protests. They're not going to take this seriously. They're not going to enact real change because they're so outraged by the violence. And they know that about people. And so that's what they're counting on.
Makes sense to me.
We go to Kara, who says, are there no generals who will not support Trump? Remember, the Nazis were just following orders. Rosemary?
Yeah, I mean, I said on my Facebook page the other day that I want an apology from every person who unfriended me or called me extreme when we began, and Alan, you did this too, early on, comparing Trump to the tactics of the Nazis. I think that we're seeing it more and more clearly. I think that he is using civil unrest right now as his Reichstag fire. And there's even, I'm looking right now online to see if it's true. There's a picture going around the internet of Trump, you know, holding up his Bible like the prop. And there's a very similar photo of Hitler doing the same thing. I need to find out if that's accurate or not. But I understand the sentiment there. We are in a very dangerous track, and we were right to call it. All those people who said, oh, you know, you liberals are just a bunch of snowflakes. What are you worried about? This is what we were worried about. You are seeing it. Please see it.
Yep.
Stephanie writes, I'm a member of the military. When I commissioned as an officer in the Army, I took an oath, and the first line of it says, I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. When I took that oath, my father looked at me and said, that means if you are asked to do something you believe that goes against this oath, you have an obligation to say no. That from Stephanie. Many people, writes Beth, I know, are choosing to focus on the violent behavior and ignoring the fact that the large majority of protesters are peaceful and that there is non-peaceful behavior from multiple sides. I am sick of some of my white friends and family bringing up that rioting and looting takes away from the peaceful protesters' message and George Floyd's memory. The reason that may be true is because of these people making the choice to voice this instead of voicing the sad and disgusting reality of racism. If the rioting and looting never happened, these people wouldn't have been impacted at all and definitely would not have even brought up a word about systematic racism and George Floyd's murder. That chosen reaction in and itself shows how much of a problem the racism ingrained in our society is.
Well, that may be, Joe, but I have to say, I have been talking about racism on this program, as you know, for a long, long time. And it's systematic racism and what goes on and why, what we have done in this country. So I don't think everybody fits neatly into that description. My point.
Yeah, and Waylon is saying, Waylon writes and says, Trump is lumping them all together. I think in many cases they are two separate groups. Very important to prove the difference. And let's see, what time do we have? Biden met with community leaders yesterday. It was not televised. He plans to address the nation today, which you were mentioning, Alan. Biden has been out meeting with people. There was a meme, I believe it was on, it's been going around the internet, of showing Or maybe actually it was just his post of where he was in the church in Delaware, and he was sitting up front with a pad of paper, and he said, "Leaders, listen." And I think it was actually a post that he had put out. That was yesterday. The letter writer goes on to say, Biden has been out meeting with people since the protest started. It is not being covered by the mainstream media. He is trying. He is not laying low. He's not getting the media attention, and clearly folks are not paying attention to his feed. But I think to Alan's point, if you know, that with that being broadcast live, that is that's certainly good, right? Let's see. I only heard a remark on a different radio station, and not hard evidence, but someone said that most of the arrests of agitators, at least one Black Lives Matter protest that turned violent, were white people, from the announcer described as representing right-wing and white supremacist organizations. I don't know about that, right? I don't.
Anecdotally, it may be true, but that's, yeah.
Right. You know. Yeah, I don't know. So let's go to, I mean, some of the other things here that I'd like to talk about in regards to what happened yesterday and what the president was talking about. But Rosemary and Mike especially, and Alan, you know, there's an article in the New York Times today about police targeting journalists as Trump blames lamestream media for the protests, his word, of course. Reporters and news photographers described being roughed up, arrested, and shot with projectiles while covering demonstrations across the country. One quote from one reporter saying, "I've never really seen anything like this." Barbara Davidson, a Pulitzer Prize-winning photojournalist, was covering a protest near the Grove Shopping Mall in Los Angeles on Saturday when a police officer ordered her to move. She showed him her press credentials, and she said in an interview the officer said he did not care and again told her to leave the area. After saying, "Sir, I'm a journalist covering this," Ms. Davidson turned to walk away, and the officer shoved her in the back, causing her to trip and hit her head against a fire hydrant. She was not hurt, she added, but she was wearing a helmet she had bought while getting skateboarding equipment for a nephew. Many reporters, photographers, and press advocates said that the treatment of journalists by police officers in recent days reflected an erosion of trust in the news media that has seeped into law enforcement under President Trump, who has deemed critical coverage of his administration fake news and has frequently labeled some news organizations and journalists with variants of the phrase enemies of the people.
He's all for the First Amendment, but not so much. He's all for the Second Amendment,
right.
But
Second
not
Amendment.
So much. But not so much for the First Amendment. And you know what? Like all dictators, like all would-be dictators, he's out there right out front, saying, "Bring down the press," because that's what he needs to do if he's going to survive.
Yeah, what I don't understand, and maybe Rosemary, you might have insight on this, is over the weekend CNN was stopped, you know, and they were taken into custody out in Minneapolis, a CNN crew, because they were standing near where there had been a building set on fire, and the cops told them to move away and arrested them, basically.
Headed by a black man, by the way.
Yeah, but the next day, protesters in Atlanta vandalized the CNN headquarters. Why would the protesters go against the press? It just shows that there's so much confusion out there. And I guess the word is chaos. People don't really know who's on their side, and they're just striking out, I guess. And that does happen.
Rosemary?
Okay, so I feel conflicted about this. I do think that the president's campaign against the press has led to acts of violence against the media. And the use of rubber bullets and tear gas, by the way, that violates international law, not just against reporters, but against peaceful, demonstrating citizens of this country. We ought to be looking in that. The police are using them as an alternative to bullets, but they're using terrible things. They are perhaps non-lethal, but they're damaging people, and not just journalists. Journalists should not be the story. I have some qualms about CNN and MSNBC and the rest of them. The others do it too. Out there running on the street,
yeah.
They've got gas masks and big protective equipment on. Demonstrators who have been enduring police violence in their communities don't have equipment like that. The media is also privileged, and that's why CNN gets attacked.
Rosemary,
and so.
We have to take a break, but I'll be right back, and we'll come back and continue. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Rosemary Arameo, and C.G. Dodds. Rosemary, I cut you off. Was there anything else you wanted to say in regards to journalists as targets?
No, I think I made my main points. If there are other questions later, I'll jump in again.
Okay.
can I just chime in just a little bit?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
What I've been finding so egregious about it is the willingness of police officers to directly aim at journalists while they're live on air. When I was watching the news, I think there was a Louisville reporter, Katie, I think her name was Caitlin Russ. They were recording, and the police directly pointed their, I think it was pepper gun or rubber bullets or something like that at her and began firing at her. And to me, that shows you just how far gone we are as a country and how militarized our police are.
You had cops who kneeled on a man and killed him in full view of camera. So firing a rubber bullet at a journalist, you did not need that illustration of how far gone we are. You had it already.
How invincible do you think you are if you are willing to go on camera and do something like that? And to your point, Rosemary, he stood there like a rooster, kneeling on this man's neck and bearing down on him. And so we're just seeing it, it's just further exemplified in these attacks on reporters, and these cops feel safe in doing it because they have a president who has consistently attacked reporters on a daily basis. You're attacking reporters because reporters are truth tellers. The videos don't lie. And that is part of what is happening here.
You know, as a lawyer, though, there's some interesting things here about charging these cops. I think all four of them should face charges. Let me start with that. But I think that it is really interesting that the demands for them to – they should be charging right now with first-degree murder. I think that's wrong. The cop that Chauvin has hired – I mean, the lawyer that Chauvin hired to defend him got Philando Castile off, and that – was a videotaped murder as well. And they do it, and Trayvon Martin's attacker also was let go. It's because the law is there to protect these police officers. That's the real problem. Not just the cops, but that the law protects them. So I like that they're taking their time before they fully charge these four yahoos. And third-degree murder, maybe. Go ahead.
I think the problem with the taking of time is because when it comes to real people, that's not the process. The process is not we're going to marshal enough evidence to make us feel like if we were to take this to trial, we could prevail. When it comes to regular
people, I don't think that's exactly right. There are many members of the Trump cabinet who have been under investigation for nearly a year now, and there are no charges yet. So
again,
I'd like to hear David Flores talk about this. I think they do take time in cases that have high public interest.
All right, one at a time. Go ahead, CG.
When I say regular people, I'm talking about people like you and I. If a crime is committed on the street and it's videotaped and the police officers see it, they're not going to say, well, let's wait and figure out what happened and gather evidence. No. They're going to say, we have probable cause. We have reasonable articulable suspicion.
Right.
We are going to arrest this person. We're going to take them to jail. We're going to decide whether or not we're going to charge them while they hang out in the jail and get fingerprinted and all of those things. And then we're going to start marshaling evidence. That is a typical process. And so the reason why people are up in arms is because this is a further illustration of the fact that police are above the law. And this is why everyone is so intent on deconstructing qualified immunity. Because but for these principles, these police officers would have been arrested just like you and I would have been arrested.
So let me ask you, CG. Go ahead, Rosemary, go ahead.
No, that's...
I was just going to ask the question about, I know a lot has been made about the difference between first degree and third degree, and that many of the protesters are calling for a first degree murder charge. My understanding of that was that you would have to prove that it was premeditated. Is that A, true, and B, is that possible?
So I'm not entirely familiar with the law in Minnesota. I have a general understanding of first-degree murder. There, I think it is premeditation and deliberation. And the reason why people are calling for that is because one of the things you learn as a first-year law student in criminal law is that premeditation and deliberation is actually not that difficult to prove. Premeditation can happen in an instant. It can happen in the blink of an eye. I believe that there is sufficient grounds to charge premeditation and deliberation, given the fact that once you are put on notice that you are killing someone, this person is saying, I can't breathe, at that moment, it should click in your head, I need to stop.
And so, listen, I think it's great that they have the attorney general handling this case now, because he's looking at the issue of overcharging. Yeah, you can charge him with first degree murder, and any good defense lawyer, and he has one, will get him off. They'll say it was a policeman in the commission of his duty. He was, you know, he was trying to protect his men and the citizens. They will say he was talking, and therefore the officer reasonably thought that he was still able to breathe, which is a misnomer, but widely believed. You can get off on a first degree murder charge. It would be much easier to get a conviction on a third-degree murder charge, which is a 20-year-to-life sentence. That'd be all right with me.
Well, it wouldn't be all right. Okay. I think that those are different conversations to have, right? It's a matter of what is practical, which I think is important to consider. But again, it goes to who is above the law. Would a normal person be charged with these things? Or would the prosecutor go for first-degree murder? And I do think that we have to practical, but we also can't say, you know, we're just going to be go for what do we think is going to be absolutely the whole run. Why can't we charge everything? And why did that in
Freddie Gray? We did that in Freddie Gray, and there were no convictions. Those cops all got off. That's as bad as no charges at all. CG, they have to use the law in a way that catches guys.
I agree with you, and I also think that we need some better lawyering going on.
Well, there you go. Mike.
But even when there is videotape, these cops are getting off.
Right.
Jurors are reluctant to find white cops guilty in cases like this. And yet when the Central Park Five went on trial, the jurors found them guilty, and they weren't guilty. I mean, it was a mistake. And this happens all the time. The justice system just is not working. Even, I mean, Rodney King, that proved it. I mean, that was the first big police beating of a black man. It was captured on videotape. That was captured on videotape. And therefore, there was the outrage. And the cops got off. That's what's going on here. It just doesn't make sense. The system is failing. What can fix the system?
Well, you would have to change the way in which people perceive police. In my little town, we hear fairly regularly, it may not be from the police department here, but it may be, we should give money so that they can do good things during that. Hey, you want a cop, so if something happens at your house, you want a cop to show up. If the house is on fire, you want the fire department to show up. These are incredibly powerful people. I think we have to remember that. And people don't like to mess with the police, which is why you get these verdicts the way that you guys have been discussing them.
Right.
But I mean...
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, it's just the issue of police. We keep saying, it almost sounds like a cliche, this is a small subset of police officers, and most police officers are phenomenal, and they do their job, and they do their duty and day in and day out. And I kind of agree with that. I hope it's true. And yet, these bad apples are protected by very, very, very powerful police unions, and they get off time and again. They escape any kind of accountability. And Rosemary, you pointed out that Cuomo is kind of leading the charge now to reverse that super secrecy law that lets people go lets police officers basically be unaccounted for. And, you know, in the Eric Garner case, that police officer had a history of disciplinary problems and of abuse of people, citizens. And if they knew that and that was out there, how could this guy be out on the street? That's the trouble here. It's a system where the lawmakers wouldn't even touch that repeal of 50A. Now they are.
Right. First of all, Cuomo has said that 50A never meant that you couldn't find out about somebody's background. I have no idea whether that's so, but he has said it to me a number of times on the air. So
but the courts haven't agreed with
them. A great article in the Times Union today about this, and the original legislators who put that law into effect, it did not intend for it to be used this way. However, it's been in effect for so long,
right.
It's now been expanded by judicial decisions that made it. They first of all,
right.
Firefighters are now affected by this, other city officials, and it's even ex-cops. You can't even get the records, the disciplinary records of an ex-cop.
That's
maybe
right.
Not what was intended, but that's the effect of the law
right
now.
Well, that's right, Rosemary. And what's more, despite the fact that he says that it doesn't mean what people think it means, he's for repealing it. So, you know, he
just
understands
now is,
that.
Though, Alan.
Yeah.
He's
right.
But he's
just
new
now,
to
that's
that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, nobody, one state senator and one state assembly member, I think it was Danny Donovan of Manhattan and a state senator in the Bronx, sponsored it. Did the leaderships do anything? Did anybody back it? No, because the unions would be angry. Now, because of this, they are favoring repealing it.
Not only that, but we, not only that, Mike, but we always hear, and I know you've heard, all the stories about the legislators who are going up the thruway at 100 miles an hour and have the cop come back to them and just wave at them.
Yeah, there's that too.
We just have about 2 minutes left. I do want to get to something that Rosemary brought up earlier that I do think is important, and that is about the autopsy, the independent autopsy that George Floyd's family, they hired a separate autopsy. So you have the Hennepin County Medical Examiner concluded that his death was a homicide, but they differ on what caused it. The independent autopsy said that Floyd died of asphyxiation from sustained pressure when his neck and back were compressed by Minneapolis police officers during his arrest last week. The medical examiner's office in its report also released Monday said that the cause of death is cardiopulmonary arrest complicating law enforcement, subdual restraint, and neck compression. The medical examiner made no mention of asphyxiation. Rosemary, why is that so? It's such an important distinction.
Well, two things are important. One is the family paid for an autopsy, and it showed that compression on his back, which is those other two guys, police officers who have not been charged, they're the ones who are kneeling on his back. So charges against them are dependent on autopsy findings. The second thing is, did he have a heart condition or not? One autopsy said yes, the other said no. If a heart condition contributed to his death, then that affects first and second degree murder because you don't premeditate. We're going to go after this guy who we know has a heart condition and we'll just step on him until he dies of a heart attack.
That's not true. That's untrue. That's untrue.
Go ahead.
CJ,
we only have about a minute, but go ahead.
It's untrue because you accept the victim as you take them. No one knows what someone's underlying health conditions are. As a matter of law, if I were to punch you in the face and not know that you had a heart condition and it caused you to have a heart attack, I would still be criminally responsible in the same degree as if I didn't know anything. And so that's why this discussion, of course, they needed an independent autopsy.
Hold on.
Because it's easier, but it would not have been dispositive because essentially you'd be saying that you weren't strong enough to be strangled for 10 minutes.
All right. We're going to have to hold it there because we're out of time. But I thank you all very much. Alan, Mike, Rosemary, and CG, thank you very much. We'll be back right after this.